Davis Vanaptorp here with Ross Dunbar and Stefan Biankowski after match day 21. The big game this weekend, of course, was between Bayern Munich and Hertha Berlin, one where Bayern Munich got a last-minute goal. There's actually a lot to talk about Bayern since they played in the Champions League last week as well. So let's start with this game first. I think the first issue we should bring up is the story that everybody's talking about, which is half an hour of added time at the end of the game. You guys obviously saw, I mean, even if you didn't see the game, the added time is definitely something that you probably caught. What did you think of the whole situation there?
I don't really want to start on a negative note, but Bayern always get these decisions. As simple as that.
I'm not blaming Bayern,
right? But I've seen so many games that I'm quite confident in my judgment that Bayern will get that 1%. And yeah, I mean, Sir Alex Ferguson used to always say about, you know, stoppage time goals, that if you put the ball in the box often enough, eventually you're going to score.
Yeah.
And we saw that against Freiburg last minute. Long ball into the box, Lewandowski, a moment of absolute brilliance, scores a goal. This one was not brilliance, but he still got the goal. Yeah,
a referee's whistle away from losing that game.
I mean, that's football, unfortunately. I know that's not a particularly detailed way of analysing it, but I mean, what can you say? I mean, are you saying the referees are biased against Bayern, or I don't know?
Well, let's get into the details too, because if you're a referee, I made this argument earlier today with somebody else, which is, it was the fourth minute of added time. They were coming forward, and that's when the foul occurred, in the fifth minute of added time. So you at least have to let Bayern Munich take the free kick.
Well, this is the thing, you don't. Because I've seen games finish all the time in the midst
where there's
of
a foul and it ends.
Like, I've seen plenty of times when the team's going to take a corner and the ref's like, no, that's time, full time. There's nothing.
Yeah,
in
but
the
a
rules.
Corner is different, though.
It's a set piece, though. There's no rule in the books. There's nothing in the rules that says you have to play a set piece. And like, I mean that side of it, I'm not bothered about that. Like, I'm not. I was more sitting there thinking, why the hell is there five extra minutes? That's what I could.
Yeah, I don't understand that either.
Like, for people who don't really pay much attention to the Bundesliga, and you might be just a casual fan, you don't really get that in German football as much as you do in EPL or in Spain.
That's
or
definitely
something.
True.
Like, almost. I mean, it'd have to be a pretty rare situation where there's any added time in the first half, and usually there's maybe like two, maybe three in the second half. So when they put up five, I thought, right, that's interesting, but I don't know.
I think that point is well heard on when it comes to corners, but I think because it's a foul, that's when the gray area starts to enter, because if you could, at the end of the added time, you could have teams just fouling players just to try to get the game to stop, you know. So I think that's where the gray area enters, because then it's a domino effect. Do you let Bayern Munich take the free kick? Okay, you do. Okay, but they want to take a short corner. You could blow it after that, but you don't know in the right this split second.
It's a goal scoring opportunity.
Yeah, so goal scoring opportunity. But then okay, so you ended on the ricochet. Fine, but Robert Lewandowski put it in the very last minuscule second of the game. So you might not even have your mouth on the whistle yet before he puts that in.
Yeah, I mean, I think, like I said, you can nitpick over what should be added on, what shouldn't be, once you're into added time. Like, should you stop for a substitution? Should you stop for a foul? Blah, 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 blah. I don't think that really matters. I think, I mentioned this after the game, and I still have people on Twitter today fighting with each other on my timeline about it.
Yeah.
Guys who are looking up the rule books and stuff like that, so people can talk and fight about, like, their interpretation of the rules till the cows come home. The thing I took issue with, well, not even issue, I'm not really that bothered about it, but like Ross says, it happens, blah, blah, blah. I was just surprised it was five extra minutes.
Yeah.
But after that, I'm like, yeah, okay.
Yeah, so I mean, Hertha made two substitutions in stoppage time. Yeah. So by rule of thumb, the referee normally adds on 20 to 30 seconds.
But
normally,
do you in added time? I don't think you do in added time.
I think they can do that.
I think they can.
But I agree with you. For me, it was the 5 minutes.
Yeah, if there's two substitutions in added time, what is the 5 minutes of added time coming from?
If you're saving two subs for added time, wasting, then you know you're pretty, yeah, exactly. Pretty, so, I mean, gnarly
even,
coach.
Even if it was 30 seconds.
Oh, Derdai is a, Pal Derdai is a pretty gnarly coach.
Even if it was 30 seconds per substitution, Hertha only made one in normal time. Mm-hmm. So I don't understand where the 5 minutes are coming from, but I mean, we can talk about it until the cows come home. It's one of those things that happens.
Eventually, it comes down to interpretation of how the. Like, I think almost every rule comes down to it's based on what how the referee feels things are going.
At the end of the day, why are you leaving Arjen Robben unmarked in the penalty box in the 97th minute? That's like the worst thing of all.
Yeah, it's a great set piece. There's no doubt about it. It was a great bit of skill from Coman who came on. I mean, we're all talking about Lewandowski. I mean, I've had a go at Coman plenty of times on this podcast, but he came on late on in that game and he made that moment of magic to get pulled down, get the free kick, and then I think he took the free kick. Maybe it was Thiago, I'm not sure.
Yeah.
He picks out Robin. Robin does something, I can't remember, then it bobbles to Lewandowski. And as we've seen week in, week out this season, Lewandowski saves them at the nick of time. Yeah. You know, so.
Yeah, so let's get into the actual game now, because this, of course, came after their big result in midweek against Arsenal. I honestly was not surprised that they dropped their level of play, because we've basically seen this whole season.
Yeah, it's been a recurring theme that when Bayern have played the kind of top four or five teams, and especially teams like Frankfurt and Hoffenheim, and okay, Leipzig, this is certainly not the case, but these teams are very, very stuffy. Cologne as well, Cologne at the Allianz Arena. So they do struggle against teams who are really compact and really well organised.
Dortmund as well, obviously.
Yeah, and Ingolstadt at home, they were really lucky in that game.
Yes.
I think they only beat Hertha 2-1 as well, something like that. It was a very narrow game. So they're not brushing teams ahead. I actually think that's a good indictment of the Bundesliga. I think that's because the Bundesliga has a lot of really good teams.
Mm. Yeah.
I'm not sure it's because Bayern are rubbish. Bayern are a top team. Okay, they might not be at the same level as Guardiola was there, which was a really exceptional set of a couple of seasons, but I think teams like Frankfurt, teams like Hoffenheim are really, really good, and Bayern have struggled in those games this year, but they also struggled in those games last year. But the key thing is, you know, when they play against Darmstadt away or when they play Ingolstadt away, they're not losing those games.
Yeah.
The big concern for me, I'd be looking at it, Bayern have relied a lot on injury time winners. Last week at Ingolstadt, that was a 0-0 game.
Yeah, that's why I wasn't surprised.
And I think Freiburg as well before that.
And we watched the game. We watched the game together. Bayern are definitely going to score. They're going to get away with it. And you know what? Sure enough, they did.
But again, if you keep putting the ball in the box at that time in the game when people are tired and not
hashtag attacking
not,
with
not
Ross
concentrated,
Dunbar.
Then that's what happens.
Yeah, so. I think that's a really good point. Actually, I think it's a really good comment to make about the quality of the Bundesliga, because not only are Bayern still scraping by, you know, with the skin of their teeth, but they've also got a Leipzig team right behind them. They're now only 5 points behind them, so it's not like Bayern are maybe 10 or 12 points clear and again complacent. There are teams breathing down their neck, and they're still winning. So, and the interesting thing is that the way that I've kind of gauged the opinion of Bayern fans off Twitter so far is that they're all absolutely apoplectic about the idea of the way this team are playing right now.
I want to make a really smart and intellectual point, but there's a common trend now that actually crossing the ball is ineffective. But if you look at Bayern's goals in that time of like 85 minutes until 90, they're all coming from cross balls. And it just shows you that, okay, people criticise Ancelotti's teams for not being so fluid and not being so inventive, but at the end of the day, it's effective, and you haven't got to give them the credit for being able to maintain that level of pressure all the way through the game.
Well, yeah, one of the things that drove a lot of people mad about Pep Guardiola's team was that they'd get down the wing and then they'd pass it through to the other wing and pass it through,
exactly.
And they try and pass it into the box and actually cross it. I mean, when you got a guy like Lewandowski in the
box, that changed actually though when Douglas Costa and Kingsley Coman came in, because there was a time where, even though Pep Guardiola played all these different formations, he actually stuck with the 4-4-2 rather consistently, and with Müller and Lewandowski in the box together, they crossed the ball in, and it was actually very effective at a time. But I think like you said, I mean, I think they still have, even though they don't look very good, they still have the class that teams just can't handle. And that's a hallmark of Ancelotti teams that he takes over, that he takes over teams with a lot of class, and he might not have the best strategy to win, but they still do anyways, because he knows that he has world-class players that are going to show up at the right time.
I think, like I was speaking to a few Bayern fans before the Arsenal game, and they were all arguing about how, you know, they're all upset about the way things are going, but one or two were saying, and it's something we've said in this podcast before, where, yeah, okay, they're not playing great, but let's wait and see what Ancelotti does in the Champions League, because this might be very, it might be a real genuine purpose to why they're not really putting, you know, putting the gas down in the Bundesliga the way Pep Guardiola did. And to a certain extent, we did see against Arsenal. I'm not entirely convinced that result, despite the scoreline. I know it sounds bizarre, but yeah, I think there's still something to be seen to see what happens here. I mean, the thing is, though, but everyone's talking about is it's individual talent that's getting this Bayern team through, and I think that's right. I mean, Thiago Stan has stood out for me this season. Robin, when he's been fit, he's came on, he's stood out a lot as well. But, I mean, without doubt, Lewandowski. I think without Lewandowski, this Bayern team are probably second in the Bundesliga right now, in my opinion. Yeah. I kind of ran the numbers on Saturday, and I think I came to something like 12 of Lewandowski's 25 Bundesliga goals this season have either been the opening
25
goal.
Bundesliga goals?
Oh, no, sorry. In all competitions.
In all competitions.
Yeah, not the Bundesliga.
I was like, what Bundesliga are we watching?
12 of the 25 this season have either been opening goals, equalising goals, or match-winning goals. So it's not like maybe like, you know, Ronaldo or Messi where they bang in like five against Espanyol.
In garbage time, yeah.
Yeah, he's picking up the goals to pick up points. And I mean, although I just said I'd give credit to Thiago and the likes, I think this is actually a one-man team right now. Yeah. I'd go as far as to say that.
Well, you brought up a pretty interesting point. I'll get to you in a second, Rex, but you brought up an interesting point off-air,
yeah,
which was...
I'm now worried about saying.
Now we're both smiling because of the discussion we had before we came on.
Yeah.
You said that there was some point that Lewandowski was too good for Borussia Dortmund.
Yeah.
And then you also said... just now that he's also too good for Bayern Munich.
Well, yeah, I'm not drawing a line under that. I'm just, the point I was making was that, you know, there did come a point when it was clear that Lewandowski was too good for Dortmund, and he moved on, and the way that Lewandowski's dragging this Bayern Munich team through game to game right now, it looks identical to that. So sure, nobody leaves Bayern Munich because they want to go on to bigger and better things, because you can't really get much bigger than Bayern Munich. But if this team, say after this Arsenal tie, Bayern Munich drop out of the Champions League because they come up against PSG or something like that, and then Bayern is still kind of stumbling in the Bundesliga, and then nothing much happens this summer in terms of, you know, maybe Lam goes out, Alonso decides to pack it in, and there doesn't seem to be a real momentum going forward, I could understand why someone like Lewandowski would think, well, hold on a minute here, I carried all the water last season, I dragged us to the top of the Bundesliga table, I did what I could in the Champions League, and nothing's really changing here. I'm going to go play for Real Madrid, I'm going to go play for Chelsea, I'm going to go play for PSG, because they look like they're going to win a Champions League.
Now, he did just sign a contract extension, so I don't know.
But not without flirting with Real Madrid for 6 months.
Yeah, so I don't know how likely this...
I actually think he is very happy at Bayern Munich. I'm not suggesting I know anything here. I mean, all indications is that he is happy at Bayern Munich. And, I mean, Bayern Munich can absolutely fill the ambition of any player, I think, but it's just a thought. The only point I'm making here is that the way Lewandowski is dragging Bayern Munich through games right now is the same way he used to drag Dortmund through games before he decided, I'm too good for this team.
But Russ, this team does seem very top-heavy. I mean, we brought up Thiago and Lewandowski. Is this basically...
Top-heavy?
Top-heavy as in, like, if somebody gets hurt like Thiago or Lewandowski, that they're basically... out of options.
Yeah, but I think that's been true for a while now. I mean, I think the whole kind of question around a second striker has been the kind of key talking point when it comes to transfers at Bayern Munich. I mean, okay, Mandzukic was there with Lewandowski for a really, really short time.
Yeah, they
never
wasn't
really part
together.
Of the squad. And then Pizarro was there, but they never really had that kind of quality second option.
That was the comeback tour, I think, with Pizarro.
But again, you know what? Lewandowski's not injured.
Yeah.
And I think with a guy like that and the kind of physical specimen that he is, he doesn't pick up hamstring injuries and little niggles. And even if he does, okay, you can put Thomas Müller in there. You know, it's not... I get what you're saying, but I mean, I don't think...
Well, Thomas Müller played... he did play on against Hertha.
Mm-hmm. They struggled.
And they struggled. And I think he played also... there was a cup game that he played, I think, against Augsburg, but it's against Augsburg. It was a little bit easier to score in Augsburg than Hertha Berlin. Yeah. I don't think it's too bold to say that. But, there's been a few times where he's played up top, and they have... Basically, are they too dependent on Lewandowski?
Yeah, they are, but I don't think it's any different from... Real Madrid being really dependent on Ronaldo for a few years. Okay, not now, because Ronaldo's has changed his role in the team, and Barcelona is really reliant on Messi as well. The problem with having a second striker at Bayern is, can you get a second striker of top class quality and say, hey, you're not going to play at all?
Yeah.
Are you going to come to Bayern Munich and sit on the bench? I don't really know if that's going to work.
Yeah.
And I don't think Lewandowski would be happy with not playing as much as he is, because he can. Mm-hmm. Lewandowski is an interesting example, though, because I think that he's a really good example for developing players, because you talked about, you know, his main ambition being winning the Champions League. He hasn't won it yet.
Yeah.
And that's like the big kind of like gap in his CV.
That's the amazing thing.
Not winning. He's probably the generation's best
centre forward. He's only played in one final.
That's why I think Bayern is a great place for him, because he could go to Barcelona or Real Madrid. Barcelona probably not, because they don't spend that kind of money on one player, and it would cost them, you know, certainly over 100 million. Real Madrid's probably unlikely. So I don't really see where else he could go. And I think with this Bayern team, there's going to be an evolution at some point. I think we've talked about it before, that Bayern have the oldest squad in the league, and by quite a distance. Like, there's a lot of players in that Bayern squad that will not be there in the next 18 months, 3 years. Alonso in particular.
The gorgeous team still from Heinkes.
It's all beginning to not say fall apart, that's the wrong word. I mean, it's all beginning to evolve now. But we're now coming into the end of Ancelotti's first year. He's probably going to be there for one more season. After that, you're talking about another Guardiola, Van Gaal-esque coach. I think that's a good time for Lewandowski, because he'll still only be 30, 31, and he's in great shape. He's not going to stop playing at that time. So for me, I don't think there's any reason for him to go.
No, I don't think so either. I mean, I was just kind of...
We were just... I think it was... But I think the point is well made, where it's... I mean, like you said, if he's having to do everything in attack... He's not a player. I mean, you brought up the example of Cristiano Ronaldo. He's not a player that can create things by himself. I mean, he can create...
I agree with that.
He can't take the ball, dribble it at defenders, and...
I think he can.
He does a decent job of it, but he doesn't do it at the top class level.
Possibly. I mean, look at Freiburg goal, for example. I mean, I know that...
That came off of a service, though.
True, but he created it himself.
Yeah, like, sure. I'm saying he doesn't... I'm talking about in terms of chance.
Yeah, he's not going to do an Arjen Robben and beat three guys and stick
exactly.
Yeah, you're right.
Yeah, so if you have a guy that basically needs the service and needs the players and he's not getting it, then he probably is going to question whether he's too good to be part of that team.
The really interesting thing as well is that it's not really just Lewandowski that's like the glaring hole in this team. If Lewandowski gets injured, it's game over for Bayern, in my opinion, right? They can take it by the Champions League. They might even have to start thinking about whether they're going to win the Bundesliga as well, because if Leipzig can keep up what they're doing, I know they've only just lost two games, but another player as well who's been, his importance has been overshadowed by Lewandowski, is Thiago.
I brought him up before, and I said
Thiago is not as important to as Lewandowski, but he's the only one in that squad that can play the role that he plays.
Yeah.
But Thiago's not like Lewandowski. Thiago isn't made of steel and never gets injured. He always gets injured.
Mm-hmm.
And when he does get injured, they have to bring in someone like Renato Sanchez or someone who just doesn't do it.
Well, they don't bring a guy like Renato Sanchez because he hasn't played at all, pretty much.
Well, maybe Kimmich and hope that
Kimmich,
he can do something.
But even
but
Kimmich, he's not...
He's
Kimmich,
not that kind of player.
Joshua Kimmich just has had a great year this year, but he's not Thiago.
I
was just going to say, I actually think this is perhaps a good example of the whole Guardiola against Ancelotti debate, because Guardiola, you know, put all the stops to get Thiago. I mean, the phrase was Thiago or nothing.
Yeah.
And Thiago spent most of the time under Guardiola injured.
Yeah.
Probably because of the intensity that Guardiola was putting him under. And with Ancelotti, okay, the shackles have come off a little bit in training, a little bit more relaxed. He's not having to bust his balls every single training session, right? I mean, it's a little more laid back, and it's more focused on the games. And I think maybe you're seeing the results of that. I know that's me being quite speculative in that, because I don't really know for sure, but I think that could be a reason why.
Yeah, if I could just make one tiny point as well from that Hertha game, it was that Mats Hummels looks half the player usually is when Boateng's not on our team. I thought he looked so suspect in the back there. Martinez as well. I don't know what Martinez was playing at for half that game. The two of them looked so lackluster. They looked like they almost they thought they could walk through that game.
They have, even against Arsenal, they did
not look like
a good pair.
And maybe they're both too similar. I don't even know. I honestly haven't put enough thought towards it.
Is Mats Hummels suffering Thomas Müller syndrome? having played so many games over the last five or six years.
That might be true.
I mean, was it average Thomas Müller was like 61, 62 games a year?
Yeah.
I think with David Alaba, I think exactly the same thing is applicable because he's just played so much football.
Yeah.
Possibly Maximo's is the same thing.
He's not playing.
Well, actually, Alaba started at the weekend. Alaba started at the weekend. So I think that's also, he was also playing on a side of the defense that he's now used to playing.
Yeah.
But I was going to say, Martinez, that center back pair is definitely, that's something that Bayern should be worried about. And I don't know if they necessarily are because they got rid of Holger Badstuber.
Yeah.
But that's something that
he's looking good for Schalke right now.
Yeah.
It's weird because on paper you look at Bayern's defense and you think, right, center back's covered. But take Boateng out of that team and all of a sudden Martinez and Hummels just look like Bambi on ice.
Now let's get to this question from at Samados07. He says, do you think that the starting 11 of Bayern, of the Bayern team that played against Arsenal in the Champions League, is the one that he's going to use in Champions League matches? Now, before we get the answers, it is worth noting that that lineup that he used, that 4-3-3 lineup that he used, was also the lineup that he used against Leipzig to get the result. So, do you think that's his go-to 11 now?
Yeah, I do. Yeah, without Thomas Müller.
Yeah.
Yeah, I think so too. Except I'd probably say, I think Ribery probably comes in ahead of Costa. If he's
probably. That maybe be the one change, but I that says everything you need to know. We've talked about Thomas Müller a lot, but that says everything you need to know about where he is right now. And honestly, I think if he has a down year, that's fine. He's in a down year, and maybe he just needs to get through this year and play next year. But yeah, he does not belong in the
team. Do you know what? Like you say, you're absolutely right, but I think I wonder how much, I mean, from what you hear from Bayern's camp, it seems to be like they are saying, he is genuinely exhausted and we're all giving him time to get back to fitness, and it's all happy-go-lucky because they're top of the league and things, and crucially, Lewandowski is winning games for them. If Lewandowski wasn't on form and they thought, Christ, we need another striker here.
Yeah.
Thomas Müller is sitting on the bench doing nothing. I wonder if they would have been so happy and cheerful about giving him time to find his own flow again.
Yeah. It was quite amusing last week watching the Bayern Arsenal game on UK TV.
Mm-hmm.
The commentators did not stop saying that Thomas Müller was not on form this year, and he kept doing it. He kept doing it even through the game, and then he comes off the bench, sidesteps the Arsenal defence, and sticks it in the corner.
Yeah.
You're like, well, that's cool.
I'll say on that goal, I think Thiago could have shot it himself, but he was like, you know what? I have two goals already. This guy needs to win. Let me just slide it over to him and let him have an easy finish, and maybe that'll turn things around.
Yeah.
But I mean, maybe in April we'll say something else. But I think right now maybe he'll start the second leg because Bayern Munich have a 5-1 lead over Arsenal.
Yeah.
But on Bayern's best day, Thomas Müller is not in the team, which completely throws my prediction of him leading the Bundesliga in goals.
That was something. Well, maybe the way Julian Green's getting on at Stuttgart, they might need to call him back.
Exactly.
Nils Pettersson back next year.
Yeah. Speaking of the Champions League, Bayer Leverkusen have a big game against Atletico Madrid. They have played against Atletico Madrid before and actually almost beat them 2 years ago. That's what I think a lot of people forget, is that 2 years ago
after they got to the final as well.
Yeah, the year after they got to the final. So even though they don't have Çalhanoğlu, I mean, there's still that history there. Let's start with the game on Friday first, because I think that's now two games in a row for Bayer Leverkusen and Roger Schmidt, where Leverkusen has actually looked really, really good. And I think you have the player in mind that might be the reason for that.
Oh, yeah. My new fixation, Kai Havertz. What's really interesting, and I think this is a real credit to Leverkusen, because they do this a lot more than people probably give them credit for, is that when a big player misses out, or like for one reason or the other, they just throw a youngster in, and more often than not, they're up to the challenge. We've seen that with Henrique, so he moved to right back. Obviously, Julian Brandt came in when it was, I know he's not a Leverkusen product of the youth academy, but eventually he came in after maybe a year or two, sitting on the bench or in the reserves. And of course, we've now seen Havertz came in to that Çalhanoğlu rule, and he's made a really big difference. I think maybe in the last two games, specifically on Friday, he was tremendous. And the kid's just so cool in terms of, you know, he doesn't. I mean, I don't mean
he's just so cool.
I mean, in terms of how he doesn't let the pressure get to him. He's a real credit actually to the German youth system in this country, because if there's one thing that stands out for me about young players in Germany, it's not really that they're no quicker than Spanish or French or English players. They're no probably not even better technically. It's this mental aptitude they always have. I see it in Kimmich, I see it in Brand, and I really see it in Havertz as well, actually, in terms of, like, he's just, right, okay, you're a number 10, 17 years old, you're going to play a number 10, boom, win us a game. I know Bellarabi played a huge part too, but Havertz was crucial to that Friday night game, and he's probably going to start against Atletico Madrid.
Yeah.
Stefan's face right now is the emoji with two love hearts. No, I agree. I mean, he's a phenomenal talent, and I have seen him a few times now. I saw him in youth league games, and he was just a class act in those games. You can tell when a player... it's just too good for that level. Mm-hmm. But I didn't think that a week later he'd be playing at the Allianz Arena against Bayern Munich and being the best player on the pitch.
Yeah.
I mean, that's just ridiculous. That just would not happen in the UK. And then he goes back to play for the under-19s. So this system of, okay, brilliant, you've done your bit for the first team, now back to the under-19s and do the hard yards, I think that's a really good testament to the German youth system. And I think...
Leverkusen's youth system. In particular.
I'm not sure, like you said there about Holger Schmidt, I'm not sure right now whether all of this kind of, all of the pieces coming together for Leverkusen right now is a product of his management,
Of course.
or just a circumstance, because you've got Lars Bender coming back now to fitness, and he's been a big player for them.
He's now back out injured.
Oh, right, okay.
Well, yeah, so it was only in the press conference today.
So. Ah, okay. So forgive me for that one.
Yeah.
But even like the Havertz coming in has stepped up to the mark. Bellarabi, of course, coming back from injury.
Yeah.
It's been a huge difference.
Bellarabi, for me, is
three assists and a goal in the five games he's played since his return, I think.
Yeah. I've talked about Bellarabi before. I think he's a huge key. But I brought up Roger Schmidt because, of course, the last game that they played, I wish Jonathan was here because he was at the game when this happened. But in their game against Frankfurt, there was a rumor that Sky spread around that he
fake
was going to get
fake
set.
News.
Yeah, it was basically fake it was news. Basically fake news that finally breached the Bundesliga. That basically Sky had there was this rumor that spread around the press box that we don't know who started it. I'm not saying that Sky started it, but I think Sky got blamed for it. That Roger Schmidt was going to lose his game Roger Schmidt's going to lose his job in the game against Frankfurt. After the game against Frankfurt.
So. Well, I mean, I've said kind of quite consistently that I don't see them changing the manager now because I think right now the people in charge, the club, still like him. That's the key thing. I don't think the players dislike him, and I don't think the executives dislike him. Unless Leverkusen got absolutely hammered against Atletico Madrid and didn't qualify for Europe, then you might see some moves towards Hint Nagelsmann.
I mean, he got an all new haircut too, and he looks more professional, so they have to keep it around, right?
Yeah, I think the club are well aware that he's a difficult character. There's no denying that.
Mm-hmm.
I think we're all aware of that too from the way he behaves at times. But yeah, it just doesn't make sense. I think if he didn't maybe finish in the top six at this point, plus depending how they do in the Champions League from here till May, then he might keep his job. I think anything besides that, he'd probably get sacked.
Yeah, Ross brought this up. He still is, they're still outside. He's still well locked in mid-table, but they're not that far away from getting back into the top four.
4 points off sixth and 7 points off fourth, but I can't see them making that gap between them and Hoffenheim.
Well, yeah, but we didn't think that they were going to go on the run that they did last year, and then all of a sudden Julian Brandt and Chicharito basically powered them back into the Champions League. So
Chicharito's another one who's kind of came back into form, actually. Mm-hmm.
I wonder if that's because of Havertz's role up front, because we've seen
the
Chicharito
goal they scored
play,
on Friday was a great goal, the way they passed it back and forth.
We've seen Chicharito play up front with Kiesling at times when it kind of worked with the kind of tall guy, little man strike partnership. We've seen Mehmedi play up there sometimes. We've seen Julian Brandt play up there sometimes. We've seen sometimes him playing on his
Julian
own.
Julian Brandt has played there up there, and I actually like that move that Julian Brandt is actually playing more centrally that's where I think the management of Roger Schmidt has come in, is he recognizes that he wants something else on the wings than what Julian Brandt offers, even though Brandt also obviously made a name for himself last year on the wing, is also with Germany at the Olympics. But I think that the fact that he is like, you know what, right now we can't Chicharito needs some help in the middle, and Brandt gives us the best option in the middle rather than Çalhanoğlu or Bellarabi or someone like that.
Havertz gives you kind of weird skill set because he's quite a tall kid, but he's not particularly strong. But when he gets the ball and he runs, he's really direct. Do you know what I mean? Like he gets the ball off him as well. And I think maybe that kind of combination up front is working really well for them. Interesting to see whether Leverkusen throw him into a Champions League last 16 game. It's a huge ask for him, but if he keeps delivering, then I don't see why not.
Well, let's get into that game now, because we thought that, I mean, I might be wrong, but I personally thought that they didn't have a chance against Atletico Madrid, especially with the way that they performed against Bayern earlier in the season. But I mean, you really can't. I feel like I don't ever want to count Leverkusen out.
Yeah, that's kind of it. I mean, I think, and I know you just said that a lot of what's going on recently is you can't give too much credit to Schmidt. I can't agree with you there, but I think if there's one thing Schmidt's good at, is set his teams up against better teams.
Yeah,
and I think actually this season in the Bundesliga, their record against top teams hasn't been great, but the Bundesliga form has been this smorgasbord of nonsense. It's really hard to judge, but in the Champions League specifically, it's the likes of Tottenham and obviously Monaco to an extent. Tottenham game is really one that stood out for me in the sense that If there's one thing Schmidt can do, like the top line of his CV, it's that he can set up a team, a certain system. Sometimes the players don't agree with it, and then he fights with them, and all sorts of nonsense follows. But if he can get a team set up the right way, then... And I think this Atletico game is going to be a perfect example of what he can and can't do. And I know we just talked about Bender's out, and we're also missing Calhanoglu. I don't think Calhanoglu's missing is going to be that big a deal. But besides that, they've got a pretty full squad to pick from.
Yeah, I mean, like, it's already quite a success for Leverkusen this year to get to the last 16, but it's a real defining game for them because this has always been the barrier. We've talked about this before. This has always been a barrier for Leverkusen in the last 16. To be like a recognised Champions League club, you really have to be in the quarterfinals. And the one thing that Leverkusen don't have is a huge fan base. They've got some okay commercial contracts. I know that like they're maybe looking to change that in the next few years, but they don't really have a lot going for them when it comes to being a recognised last eight Champions League club. So if they can bypass this stage, missing the Champions League next year is not a huge problem because you can keep a hold of Chicharito, you can develop all those young players who you've got coming through like Julian Brandt and Havertz. I still think qualifying for the Europa League will be a really big issue, but this is a huge, this is it, like you said there, like about Leverkusen having a chance, and it's interesting like how things have changed over the last 3 or 4 weeks because Atletico are not playing well in La Liga right now. Griezmann is not dominating games as a striker as he has been. There's been talk of Simeone kind of tiring out a lot of his players with the intense style that he has. So this is really coming at the right time for Leverkusen. I'm quite optimistic for them going into this game.
I think they're going to throw everything at this because it's the first home leg at home. They know, I mean, from the last time they played, they only managed to pick up one in the second leg when it came back to Leverkusen. So I think we'll probably see a really attacking Leverkusen team here and just really throw everything they can at it. If they can take maybe, I mean, I don't know if they can actually win the game, but if they can and they can maybe put a goal or two ahead of Atletico when it's second leg, that obviously gives them a huge opportunity.
And Bellarabi is really important because we've seen in games, particularly against Hertha and Frankfurt, two teams that are really compact, really solid, really aggressive in the middle. If you can beat a man, if you can take a man out of the game, it causes complete chaos because centre half has to go out to left back position, has to go into midfield, and with Atletico, that's going to be really important.
That's where I think Atletico actually struggles. I obviously don't know a lot about Atletico Madrid because we follow the Bundesliga more, but I can say that individual skill is something that's what really breaks them up. Is when they're really good at double teaming and they're really good at pressing, of course, and basically getting players in bad situations to make them make bad choices. But when they do make the right choice and they get by that double team, that's when things tend to open up a little bit more. And if you look through their fixture list. They're on a three-game winning streak, but they have played teams in the bottom half of the table. But I will say against the top teams in La Liga, they have they have definitely struggled. The only point I think that they've gotten from any team in the top four is, I mean, the Spanish fans can correct me if I'm wrong, but I think it's just Barcelona. That's the only the only team that they've been able to get a point against. So, I mean, it's not like last year. I think it was a little different where Atletico, where they looked really they looked unbreakable last year under Simeone, but I think this year they've looked a little bit more fragile, and maybe because I think you guys are both right that I actually disagree with you a little bit in that Leverkusen, I think, have to put all in this Champions League campaign because they know that they are going to lose Chicharito in the summer because they're not going to make the Champions League. So I think that's why that they're going to see how far that they can go. Kind of like Wolfsburg last year. They're going to see how far they can go, maybe at the expense of their league form, although their league form seems to be pretty good right now. But I think that the Champions League, they're going to try to get to the quarterfinals and maybe get beyond, and that'll be a success for them.
Yeah, I agree. I mean, like, this is the thing about the Champions League, is once you get to the quarterfinals, it starts to become a bit of a lottery. I'm not saying that you can't prepare or you can win games through your own skill, but generally speaking, the margins are so fine at that level. I mean, let's say they do beat Atletico, and let's say they end up getting a really favourable draw. Mm. Who knows? You know, like, I'm not saying they're going to go on any further than that. I'm not sure about that, but
I mean, Benfica might be Dortmund.
Yeah, exactly. That's the kind of margins of error that you have at that stage of the Champions League. I'm not sure about Chicharito leaving in the summer yet. I don't think the club wants to make any comment on that. Top Rack leaving is a bit of a blow.
That too.
But financially, I think it kind of makes sense. I think
I don't think Top Rack's anywhere near as good as Dortmund seem to think he is.
I don't think you can play Toprak and Socrates together. Jeez. But I think if you have,
it's better than Matthijs Ginter, that's for sure. Yeah,
well, that's the thing. That's better what they have than what they have. And I think, and he's been Toprak has been part of their recent resurgence to these Champions League spots. I think because he's been there along the way. So
just to go back to the actual game for a minute, like I mentioned this earlier briefly, but I'm really interested to see how they do without Calhanoglu, because as you mentioned with Bellarabi, he's a guy who can beat a man, and I think one of the things that really slowed Leverkusen right down at the start of the season is when Schmidt played Calhanoglu out left, almost like as an inside winger or something, and I just don't know where Calhanoglu's strengths lie, but it's not on the break, it's not trying to beat a man, and when he was playing on the left, that just completely closed down any avenue to move forward there. So when you have, I mean, if you think about it,
they might be better that they don't have Calhanoglu.
Well, exactly. This is my point. Yeah. I think you might find that going forward, they've now got the rest of the season now more or less without him. And if they can keep Brandt, Havertz, and Bellarabi fit, those three behind Chicharito, I think you actually might find they play a lot better without Calhanoglu. Calhanoglu might come back, was it late March or something, and find there's no space for him in this team.
It's a lot, certainly without Calhanoglu, I think it's a lot more fluid.
Yeah.
I think one thing I've noticed a lot about Leverkusen is when Kevin Campbell gets the ball in deep positions, there's no movement or there's no creativity in forward areas,
and that's why he's there too.
Yeah, exactly. So it's hard for him to actually break the lines to find someone at the other end because there's no one there. But at least now with Havertz playing up front alongside Chicharito and dropping off into that kind of area between defence and midfield, and then you've got Bellarabi out wide, you've now got options, you know, and that makes a huge difference. And I agree with you. I think we could see a really attacking Leverkusen side tomorrow.
I need to say something to now Ross, because I haven't done it yet. I think now Lars Bender's, now that he's injured, we're going to see Arangis probably come into this team. We really need to see him do something.
Yeah, we need to see him do,
because he's been fucking dreadful this season. I'm using the F word because I have to. One of our colleagues is a Leverkusen fan. I was talking through it with him, and we're both in absolute agreement. Don't know where this guy's been for last year, Arangis. Yeah. When he joined Leverkusen, Ross was running down the street with Chile flags. He couldn't believe that Leverkusen signed this talent. He's been absolutely dreadful, and he's playing in a position that is so crucial to that team. I mean, with Lars Bender, I think made quite a big difference when he played on Friday. He's so more mobile. I'm trying. Who's our central midfielder?
Baumgartlinger.
Sorry, of course. So Baumgartlinger is fine, but he doesn't have the same pace or anything. I don't think he's really made for that Champions League level.
Baumgartlinger, I think, he's like a mid-table workhorse where he's a quality Bundesliga player, but maybe not as good in Europe. But that's why I think that's the biggest disappointment with Arangis because
Arangis should be playing ahead of Baumgartlinger.
Yeah.
But I think now that I'm going through this in my head, I think Schmidt actually might play Baumgartlinger because he probably trusts him more than Arangis right now. If Arangis plays, he has to do something because this guy's meant to have all the talent in the world. I know Ross is going to rebut all this in a moment, but these are the games that they signed the likes of Arangues, Chicharito, all these guys, Dragovic, you know.
Yeah.
These guys are all signed to play in these games. Mm. So yeah, if Arangues plays, I want to see him do something.
Are you waiting for my comeback now?
Yeah.
Well, I'm doing this one for my hombres in Chile. I actually agree with you. I don't think he's been very good this season.
I miss when we used to
But again, I don't want to take the easy cop out on this one, but perhaps again it's Thomas Müller syndrome.
He's playing a lot.
Copa America, he's played two Copa Americas in a row, played a World Cup in between. Maybe it's exactly the same thing.
He's been off injured for a year and he's had plenty of time off.
He totally shattered his Achilles.
Unfortunately, I can tell you from personal experience, when you come back injured, I mean, look at Fernando Torres. He had that knee injury and he was never the same. So, I mean, with injuries, I think there's, you never know if they're ever going to be back. And I think, and maybe that injury, being out all last year with an injury, and maybe that's the injury that derails his career.
And that was always the great thing about him, was he just had this incredible lung power, and like I don't think I've seen many performances which matched his against Lionel Messi in the Copa America final.
Mm-hmm.
The first one that Chile won, it was phenomenal in that game. And yeah, I mean, I agree. I think it could be a case of that injury possibly derailing him at the moment. Mm-hmm. This summer's going to be really important for so many players. I know that's like four or five players now that I've said have Thomas Müller syndrome, but I think this summer, especially when players are going to have a rest, well, most of them at least.
Yeah.
Well, Chile are probably at the Confederations Cup as well, aren't they? So it's not going to happen for Arangues. But I think in general, players need to have a rest this summer, and then we'll see these guys at top form next year.
Stefan, does Leverkusen win this first leg?
Yeah, I'm gonna be a bit hopeful and optimistic and say I think they can win this maybe 2-0, 2-1, yeah.
Okay.
3-1.
3-1, okay. Yeah. I think they will actually concede an away goal too. But I think that they have a strong chance of winning.
And do you know, I'm sorry to cut you off, Dave.
Yeah, it's fine.
They have no right to win this game to an extent. So but even though that we're going into it saying that they can, I think that's quite good credit. So yeah.
No, I think I'm actually more excited for this game than I was probably 2 weeks ago, because of the way that Leverkusen has kind of turned it around.
Yeah, maybe a month ago we've been really worried about this game. Mm-hmm. Coming over the horizon, thinking it's going to be real spanking.
Yeah, one thing I wanted to bring up before we get to our shouts from the Tribuna, I was thinking about this question last week, because of course Bayern Munich struggled in the first half of their game against Arsenal, but turned it around, and then of course Dortmund really struggled against Benfica and missed probably more chances than most teams get in a lifetime in the Champions League. How do you think Leipzig would have performed against both of those teams?
Arsenal
and Benfica in both
those
games.
That's a good question. I think they'd probably beat them. I think they'd beat.
You think so?
They'd beat Benfica and Arsenal. Yeah, I do.
Okay, because obviously we're going to be asking this question obviously next year, and I think this is a good context, because both the two big teams in Germany struggled. I mean, Bayern Munich did struggle in the first half, and then when I think Koscielny came off, it kind of changed everything. But I wanted to know, because Leipzig turned it around at the weekend, but they had been kind of struggling with the title race a little bit. But that's why I wanted to know what you guys thought.
I can see them matching Benfica. I'm not sure if they've got it to beat Arsenal, just because despite how good they've looked this season, they have kind of bottled it in the games against Dortmund and Bayern.
Oh, I don't think they bottled it against Dortmund, and that's a bit harsh. They beat Dortmund at home, and they had like four or five first team players out in that game. So, but I think that's the big conclusion about Leipzig. I don't want to digress, but
I mean, this is a complete counterfactual. But I'm just
so many injuries.
But I was just thinking last week that, I mean, if you look at the way that, I mean, Leipzig obviously have their style of play, and if they don't play their style of play, they're not as good. But I think against Arsenal and against Benfica, they could have played their style of play, and I think they could have done their style of play better than both Bayern and Dortmund could have put in their own style of play. Maybe Bayern doesn't really have a style of play right now, or maybe it's just an unattractive style of play, but I think that the way that Leipzig play now is it could be very useful. Maybe it's too exhausting for a Champions League campaign, but it would be very useful and very interesting to see in this year's Champions League.
See, I was actually going to make a kind of counterpoint to that, in the sense that I actually think the way the Champions League is played right now, you have the teams that are better set up at the back and can counter are perhaps better suited to the Champions League rather than the teams like Leipzig who just get in your face for the whole game. Because I could see a better team like Bayern showed against them. The problem with Leipzig is they're top heavy, so if you can actually, if you don't start panicking when Leipzig close you down, you can actually get in that defence quite easily, I think. Mm-hmm. Which I think Champions League quality teams would be able to do.
I don't know, actually. That's a whole other point for another time. I don't think Leipzig.
Wait till next season.
Yeah, I don't think that Leipzig is all that actually all that top heavy, but I think but that's a good point. All right, so let's move on to. By the way, tell us what you think at Tribuna Podcast on Twitter and also on our Facebook page. I'm very curious to know what you guys think of how Leipzig would have performed against these two teams. We might have again this debate in 2 weeks when the second legs come around, but yeah, I was just thinking that last week. All right, so let's get to a shout from the Tribunas now. Ross, what do you want to shout from the Tribuna this week? Stefan gave me this look like I you have to give me time, but a little breaking the fourth wall here.
Yeah,
but go ahead.
I'm just going to say again, I really think Ingolstadt are better than the table suggests. Okay. Maybe I've got a little bit of confirmation bias that because I wrote a piece saying that they might stay up, mm-hmm. I'm like now saying yeah they're brilliant every week. But I do actually genuinely think they're a good side, and mm-hmm. I think if you go through the team, I think they've got a good structure there. You know, like if you can go through the squad, I mean the front three of Pascal Gross, Leke and Lizcano is working really, really well. I think at the back, Marvin Matip is showing that he's a really solid defender. I think Tisserand, who was playing at the African Cup of Nations, looks a really, really good player. I mean, it's interesting to see how this team's evolved this year in the Bundesliga. At the start, they were really high pressing, mm-hmm. and it didn't work for them. Mm-hmm. And Kalczynski obviously was given the book quite early on. And
I think Kalczynski was trying to be too much like
Eisenhower. Yeah, I agree. Yeah, he tried to copy exactly the same style. But Walpurgis has come in and he's used little bits of what Eisenhower was trying to do, and he's tried to apply it in this new 3-4-3 system, and it's working for them. The problem for Ingolstadt is, and it's exactly the same for Hamburg as well, who are in a great run of form, is that everyone is winning at the bottom of the league. Mm-hmm. Everyone is picking up points. Mm-hmm. The last few years, teams like Stuttgart and Paderborn, they couldn't buy a win. Mm-hmm. You know what I mean? So now it's really changed at the bottom of the league because teams are now picking up points on a regular basis. And with Ingolstadt in particular, you know, 2-0 win at Frankfurt, not many teams do that. And okay, mm-hmm. there was some controversial incidents in the game, but I thought they were very solid against Bayern last week. Again, very, very solid. They've drawn with Dortmund at home, but they need to turn that into wins against Darmstadt, Mainz, these kind of teams at the bottom of the league. But I do think that Ingolstadt still have a good chance at this point in the season. Mm-hmm. I'm not saying they will stay up because, as I said, you know, Hamburg are winning, Bremen winning at the weekend as well. But it might change things around. Perhaps Wolfsburg may get dragged in, Augsburg may get dragged in. So interesting to see how that works out.
Yeah. Ingolstadt is an interesting team because I think they're the only team that I've seen in recent years where all their best players are defenders. Mm. They obviously lost one in Benjamin Hübner to Hoffenheim. You can see what he's doing at Hoffenheim now. But I think that Valpriks has picked up on that. And he's like, you know what? I have to play all of my best players in order to survive. Mm. And so he found a system where he plays all of his best players. And I think that more than anything, I think
it's changed. They're not conceding a lot of goals in games at all, really. I mean, Dortmund one was a bit of an exception. Even when they play Hertha, when they play Leipzig, mm-hmm. they're doing really well at the back. But and that's the basis of doing well, you know, across the seasons. If you have a solid defence, then you can build on it in forward areas. And set pieces have been really important for them this year. Mm-hmm. I would like to see the statistics, but I think they've probably got probably the most set piece goals this year. I think they're doing really, really well there.
Yeah, I was just thinking because also their two most expensive signings ever are Dario Lizcano, who they acquired in January last year, and Marcel Tisserand, who's a defender. Yeah. So both of those players, I think, have been playing consistently under Valpriks, and I think they should because even though Lizcano is not a goal machine, he's kind of like Yusuf Poulsen, a guy who works really hard and basically can. There's your Ingolstadt corner with Ross Dunbar. Stefan, what do you want to shout from the Tribune this week?
Well, I was rattling my brain for thoughts, and I thought maybe I should just complain about how boring Cologne Schalke was, how boring Cologne always are. But instead, I'm going to pick up a point our colleague Matt Pearson wrote about, and I feel okay doing that. I'm not ridden by guilt because as I was in the office with Dave, you hopefully backed me up that I did kind of talk him through it with him before he wrote it. So it was something, it wasn't just, I'm not just piggybacking on his own thought, but Gladbach Leipzig was a really fun game to watch on Sunday. Gladbach right now under Hecking look something back to what they used to be, you know, in terms of a team pushing for a top six spot. And Leipzig going into that game, obviously losing two games, it could have went either way. We were talking about it, we couldn't really, really couldn't call it between the two going into the game. I thought the way Leipzig won the game was really interesting, and simply put, they didn't win it well, but they still won it, and I think that's really interesting.
Both of their goals were just basically one touch, quick one touch passing.
Timo Werner, again, just looks incredible. I know Modesta for Cologne's probably scored more goals, he's more important on paper, but I think the season Timo Werner's have. Someone asked me today actually, what's the difference between Werner this season and last season? And you know, without actually really looking into the most obvious one's obviously that he's playing in a better team, but at Stuttgart he was also pushed out wide a lot. And he's just
playing, because I was going to make the point, I think he's playing in the right position.
Yeah, definitely.
Yeah, like part of his confidence.
Yeah, you know, confidence, like, yeah.
Especially, we were at a game at Stuttgart last year, and Timo Werner had five or six golden opportunities. I mean, like, it was like one touch, strike, and it had been a goal, and he ended up missing all of them. And you could sense that his confidence was running really thin. It Stuttgart, so much pressure on him, being the local guy and trying to keep Stuttgart up. But I think going to Leipzig, apparently he's worked with a sports psychologist, so perhaps that's helped. But Leipzig seems to be the club where everything's in place for him. You know, he's working with a really top-class backroom staff, and it's working for him because
and on the pitch, else as well, he doesn't stand out at Leipzig because there's a team, at least in the front line, full of so much talent. We saw Oliver Burke come in. I don't think he really did too much, to be honest with you. He was fine in bursts, but you know, Forsberg again, incredible. He scored a fantastic goal, and you know, it was just Leipzig winning ugly. They managed to cut the lead with Bayern to five points now. I think it showed some really strong, showed a really strong mental characteristic in terms of, you know, going to Borussia Park. I know Gladbach haven't been great this season.
The form team in the last...
Well, they were unbeaten under Hecking until Sunday.
Yeah.
Oh, well, there we go then.
So
yeah, I mean, it's not a huge point. It's not a really big revelation, but I just think we've seen Leipzig dazzle throughout this season. They had to come back from this mini rut of two games they've lost, and in a really, really tough away fixture, I thought they did a really good job of it.
Do we have a title race?
I was actually going to ask that question.
I wanted to direct it to you.
I mean, you know how I feel. I think it's a month-to-month thing now. But I think this month has actually gone the way that we thought it would, because there were some fixtures that Leipzig had, like the game at Borussia Park, that we didn't know if they were going to get out with wins.
Yeah.
And I think that, but again, I mean, going to Dortmund, I mean, and you even mentioned Hamburg. You were on the Hamburg bandwagon when we actually talked about it. But we said, yeah, they could drop points in that game easily, and they did. So I think that I think it still will be a month to month thing. But I mean, with the way Bayern is playing, you can't count out Leipzig, especially since they don't have any other competition that they have to worry about.
The fact that it's mid-February and they're still only 5 points off is incredible. If Dortmund were still only 5 points off Bayern at this point, we'd be saying good on them.
Yeah, and that's the thing. I mean, it was actually kind of at this point of the first half of the season when Bayern began to stumble, because they had games against, I think it was, I'm probably not got this in the right order, but I think it was like they had Dortmund, they had Hoffenheim, and they had Cologne, all kind of back to back. They've got these games coming up. They've got to go to Cologne, they've got to go to Hoffenheim, they've got to play Dortmund at home. I don't think the title's, I don't think it's over. I'm not saying it's going to change.
Over, no.
It would still take a bit of a swing. We need Bayern to drop points at least three or four times for that to happen, because inevitably Leipzig are going to stumble at some point as well. But I think the Gladbach game is really impressive, because that's the kind of game where if Gladbach play like that against Bayern, they might get something out of the game.
Yeah, Gladbach, that's a good point.
Gladbach fans probably think they should have got a point out of that, and I wouldn't really argue with that at all. And it is really interesting, because the one thing, I mean, I know football is an exceptionally complicated game, but at the end of the day, Leipzig have fewer games. They don't have a Champions League competition they have to play.
They don't have a cup competition. They were knocked out in the first round.
Exactly. And see if it comes down to, like, you know, in a couple of weeks when you have, you know, I haven't looked at the fixture list, but God, what happens if what happens if Bayern have a quarter-final game on the Wednesday and they have Dortmund away or Dortmund at home on the Saturday or something?
We also have an English Woche in March, at the start of big March, when you have Bundesliga on Tuesday and Wednesday night. So again, there's so many games in that short time frame. I agree with you, it's month to month. I mean, end of the day, Leipzig could go on Saturday, whatever they're going.
We haven't had a month in the title race.
Cologne, then they might drop points in that game.
Yeah, Cologne. But they're at home against Cologne. They already made their trip to Cologne and they got a point out of it. But then they have Augsburg, Wolfsburg, and Bremen, and Darmstadt, and Mainz.
And those are games that they've tough.
They're still games that they should win. And let's look at we can look at Bayern's fixture list in the meantime. I mean, these games for Leipzig. I mean, those games that if they don't win, then they're out. But
what's really interesting is that the way that Bayern are winning games is the way that you'd expect a smaller team to win games, in the sense that they've got one or two players they're relying on, where Leipzig, the team with less resources, are winning games with a whole array of talent, which is kind of the way you'd expect Bayern to win games.
Yeah. For Bayern, it's they are home at Hamburg. That's not an easy fixture anymore.
Well, Hamburg have shipped 36 goals in the last six visits. Let's wait and see.
But I mean, they have two different central defenders, so
let's wait and see.
Will De Jure play? Yes or no? That's a real question.
Exactly. And then they have Cologne, Frankfurt, Gladbach, and Augsburg. So not as strong of a schedule, but
and
still
Hoffenheim, and then
I think that's three really tough games, and Hamburg, Cologne, Frankfurt, and ends at Gladbach as well. I think that's much harder than Leipzig right now,
away at Gladbach too,
and it's also comes down to like psychology. Like if Leipzig can go within 2 points of them when Bayern have got like quarterfinals or semifinals to look forward to, that turns everything on its head. 5 points is a huge difference from 2 points. Obviously it's 3 points, but I mean, in terms of how they approach games coming up.
Yeah, Bayern's April is really tough. It's, well, after Augsburg, it's Hoffenheim, Dortmund, Leverkusen, and Leverkusen, all within probably the Champions League quarterfinals, semifinal time. So that is going to be the moment of truth, especially for
Freiburg,
Bayern and
Freiburg in the last day as well.
And what's your shape from the show?
So mine is, we talked about this yesterday, Guido Burgstaller.
Yeah!
I'm talking about
the guy who missed that chance.
Guido.
Of course, but he is...
He is tearing up.
Yeah, I still think that... he's the... After Adam Salai, after Franco Di Santo, after all of these strikers that Schalke just put so much money into.
Huntelaar,
too. I mean, seriously. I mean, they kept on extending Klaas-Jan Huntelaar, but...
There's a video of him today going around the room on Twitter. I think the club must put up of them training, and it's Huntelaar dancing around, joking. I'm like, why is this guy joking around?
He just lost his job. He lost his job, and he's dancing around. Guido Burgstaller is fine. I feel totally fine saying this, that he's finally the striker that Schalke has been.
He's looking really good, and even in that game against Frankfurt, when probably, I'm still going to say it now, one of the worst games I've ever seen. But Guido Burgstaller was all right. His touch is quite good. His movement is good. And if you give him the ball in the box, he's gonna find the net. And the Schalke's goal in the first minute, that cross, absolutely inch perfect. Yeah. You could not have even scripted that as a better cross than that. Yeah. It was so good. Obviously, Schöpf came in and scored it, but Burgstaller was there waiting to pounce as well. And if you create chances for him, he's going to score.
Yeah, Guido Burgstaller, it's weird to say because he was in the second division. This is really the first big year that he's ever had. But he's obviously going to get a look into the national team because the only other striker that Mark Janko.
Davis is saying straight to Germany.
Same
thing.
No, but yeah, I mean, if Johnny Walsh was here, he'd be quite happy to point out that, you know, the second division, the quality there in the last 3 or 4 years has really jumped up a gear, and there isn't much between the top division. What are you laughing? I'm being serious here. The top division, the top half of, you know, the Zweite Bundesliga is comparable to the bottom half of the Bundesliga.
Well, I made this point too. One of the reasons why I thought Freiburg was going to go down was because the trend had been that one of the teams that come up tends to go down the next year. I mean, that might not be the case anymore. Maybe both teams, maybe two Bundesliga teams that aren't expecting to go down, they have to challenge these second Bundesliga teams. But anyways, back to Burgstaller. I mean, you mentioned his finishing. That's the only thing that Schalke has ever needed out of their striker position, because they have the creative players and they have the playmakers in Goretzka and Benteleb. I mean, some of Benteleb's balls yesterday were fantastic, and so they have those kinds of players. I mean, and they even have Caligiuri. He's playing up top with Burgstaller.
Now your face has the emoji with love heart eyes. Caligiuri.
It's amazing how much just one player can take so much pressure off of everybody else to finish their chances.
Yeah, I think it'd be interesting to see how. I think he's in a really good position right now, because I think Schalke are actually going to lose a lot of their key players next season.
Yeah,
I think Kolasinac's going to leave. I think Max Meyer, Goretzka could also go as well. And if these things happen, then him alongside, I think we'll find he and Mbolo will try. They'll try and figure something between the two of them rather than just one or the other.
Yeah.
So yeah, his future looks bright in Schalke. He's taking his chances. Good on him.
Yeah. Of course, he didn't score at the weekend. It's a weird moment to pick.
He almost
up.
Got a good goal though. But
he had so many chances in that game against Cologne. I think he was unlucky to get something out of that game. So. But yeah, that's all we have this week. We have a big Champions League game to talk about. Maybe at the end of this week or next week, we have to still decide that. And we'll be back, of course, next week. Please be sure to also rate us on iTunes, of course, as you guys have been doing. Like I said, most of them have been good, and I really appreciate the fact that you guys like what we do here. And we apologize again for not doing one last week, but I think our schedules didn't match up. But again, we really enjoy this, so thank you for downloading, and thank you for listening. So, and keep coming in with the good reviews, because that's obviously how we build our brand. You can also follow us on Twitter @TribunaPodcast, and be sure to like our Facebook page if you haven't already. Besides that, SB and Koski on Twitter, Ross Dunbar 93, Davis_Vanoptor for me if you want someone that's not going to clog up your timeline. We'll see you guys next week. Thanks.